This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Violence in Afghanistan does not begin to approach the levels of Iraq, but there has been a surge in Taliban attacks in the run-up to elections that are scheduled next month, and higher numbers killed on all sides. On Sunday, an explosion in Zabul province in the southeastern part of the country killed 4 American soldiers. There are few stand-up battles in a campaign marked by assassinations, executions, and ambushes, classic hit-and-run guerrilla tactics, but Taliban forces have suffered in counterinsurgency operations as well. If you have questions about the violence in Afghanistan, progress on reconstruction, and the security situation leading up to the elections, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Jonathan Lande is senior national security correspondent for the Knight Ridder News Service. He's been traveling with U.S. forces in the rough terrain of Zabul province. He's back in the capital, Kabul, and he joins us by phone there from now. Thanks very much for being with us, Jonathan.
My pleasure.
Can you tell us a little bit about these insurgents? How closely are they tied to bases in Pakistan? How much are they operating inside of Afghanistan? And where are they hiding out?
Good questions. On the Pakistan question, if you talk to Afghan officials, senior Afghan officials, they will insist that the reason, or one of the main reasons that we've seen this resurgence of the Taliban is because they are receiving assistance, are receiving weapons from Pakistan. It's a big question. The Pakistanis, of course, deny that this is happening, but undoubtedly there's no way to deny that we are seeing a resurgence of the Taliban. More than 2 years after the Bush administration declared that major combat operations here in Afghanistan are over. They are unable, as you said earlier, to face the United States troops and other coalition troops in stand-up face-to-face battles. They tried that at the beginning of the fighting season, which began in March when the snow melted in the passes of the mountains. They suffered some very, very heavy casualties in a number of face-to-face encounters, and began basically adopting these, as you described, these hit-and-run tactics, these guerrilla tactics, terrorist tactics, where they are targeting government officials, moderate clerics, civilians suspected of being informers, or people who have been cooperating with American or international reconstruction projects. And it's a campaign that has claimed more than an estimated 1,000 Afghans, and at this point, more than 40, close to 50 American troops, since, at least by my count, since this upsurge began in March.
Guerrilla tactics require, at least according to classic theory, that the guerrillas be able to melt back into the local population. Are the Taliban able to do that with the cooperation, or are they forcing local villagers to go along?
I think it's a question of both. I think that there are villages that are being coerced into providing food and shelter to the Taliban, who come down from the mountains seeking local assistance. But I also have no doubt in my mind that there is also quite a bit of local sympathy for the Taliban, whether it be because of support for their very puritanical brand of Islam, or tribal ties. The Taliban are all Pashtuns. They're from the majority ethnic community of Afghanistan, and so there's an ethnic affinity between villagers and the Taliban. And you're absolutely right. They do melt back into the local villagers. When I was out with the troops for 3 days in Zabul province, in one of the worst hit areas of Zabul province, Deit Chopan, we could actually hear the Taliban talking on the radios. The Americans monitor them, and they're very, very close. And yet, during 3 days I was on patrol, they didn't find any in the searches of the villages that we were conducting.
Let's bring another voice into this conversation. Here with us in Studio 3A is Gary Anderson, a retired colonel of Marines and a frequent contributor to this program. He's just back from Afghanistan himself. Gary, always nice to have you on the program.
Good to be here, Neil.
You were there in Afghanistan. I wonder what you make of Jonathan's report.
Yeah, I think the question of the Taliban has to be looked at in context. Yes, particularly in areas that are Pashtun in nature, you've got a certain amount of tribal loyalty and a certain amount of this Afghan-Arab concept of hospitality. If you're in my house, I'm going to protect you. My cut on it is that, by and large, the population of Afghanistan is tired of war. The Taliban as a whole throughout the nation have worn out their welcome, and I don't believe that they're capable of launching a Tet-like offensive, Tet being the Vietnam offensive that was a coordinated nationwide attack to disrupt the Americans in 1968. I think you always see a seasonal uprise, upsurge in violence at this mm-hmm. time of year, but particularly coming close to the elections, you're going to see a lot of attempt to disrupt the elections. The ability to do it in a coordinated manner, I would question.
So you're saying that the Taliban is largely confined to these Pashtun areas, these provinces along the Pakistani border, but not able to penetrate into the interior of the country?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that they couldn't in small bands, but I don't think you're going to see the kind of national uprising that I think I've seen some reports in Washington being afraid of that. I really think that right now they're an organization that's in disarray. A lot of the younger folks really would like to see a wider social agenda, a wider political agenda, and all they get from Mullah Omar and his leadership cadre is more Quran. And I think that's causing problems.
Jonathan Landay, let me ask you. A Taliban spokesman has said over the past few days that the Taliban would avoid attacks on Election Day on polling stations and on civilians, but would still try to inflict casualties on American and Afghan troops leading up to the elections. What does that say about their tactics? I mean, last time they vowed to thwart the elections and failed spectacularly.
I think that what you're seeing is a very smart enemy that knows how to adjust and knows how to preserve themselves. I don't think there's any question. I agree that there's no question that they're capable of launching a Tet-like offensive of the kind that they launched back in 1994 and rolled over most of this country. And I don't even think that is in fact what their goal is. I think my reading of what's going on is that this is a group who has rearmed, has got new money from al-Qaeda, according to both American and Afghan officials, and I believe that what they're trying to do, perhaps, is learn from Iraq and tie the United States down, not just in one country, Iraq, but in two countries, Iraq and Afghanistan, they're taking a very long view of this, in that they understand that the longer they tie us down here, the more that they can bleed the United States military, the more that they pump up opposition at home to continued military involvement overseas, and beyond that, it provides them with extremely good propaganda, in that they can in the propaganda disseminated by jihadi by global jihadists, they're able to accuse the United States of not occupying just one Muslim country, but two. And so I think that their decision not to attack the polling stations and not to attack civilians is precisely that they understand that they're not going to be able to disrupt the elections. They weren't able to disrupt the presidential elections. But my question is whether or not that's in fact what they really intend.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and we'll go to Manny. Manny calling us from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hello?
Hi, Manny. You're on the air.
Yes, I want to say we can put names, al-Qaeda, Sergeant in Iraq, Taliban in Afghanistan, all these names, but the bottom line, we are trying to find an ideology telling anybody, if you grab yourself with some explosive and go kill any non-Muslim people, you are going to go to the garden and have 72 women and wine and milk and all that. You cannot fight this kind of ideology with the way we are doing. I think we're going to have more people killed from our soldiers and others. And I don't personally, but I also want to say we are helping that. Musharraf is happy that this thing is going on. He's getting money from us every day.
President Musharraf of Pakistan, yes.
Right. And then we have the Gulf area who's supporting the Qaeda financially is very happy. They doubled the oil price. So we are really feeding onto that system both ways, for those who want to be martyrs and kill themselves and kill others, and at the same time give them that opportunity, at the same time give them also the finance, and directly and indirectly.
Mm-hmm. Let's avoid some of the tactical questions about suicide bombings and that sort of thing. Well, what about this ideological issue, Gary Anderson?
Well, I think when you talk to Afghans, they will tell you that you probably not likely see a lot of Afghans strapping bombs on themselves. There have been, far as we know, two successful suicide bombings this spring, both of them pretty much tied to foreign fighters sneaking through. Very, very hard for the Arab foreign fighters to infiltrate the way they have in Iraq, because they don't speak the language.
They stand out much more. Yeah.
They stand out. But that's not to say leakers can't get through. So I think you have to be careful characterizing the Taliban and the Al-Qaeda as having the same type of tactics. I do think you will see an attempt perhaps by Al-Qaeda and the Taliban to sneak through a couple of bombers to attack an American or allied target to cause a really big headline-grabbing event. I think that's something you can expect to try to see them do.
On or before Election Day?
On or before the Election Day. Something to take away from the election.
Yes, Manny, go ahead.
May I say one comment? With all due respect to you, sir, can you explain to me the homegrown terrorist attack that happened in London with the people who were born there, raised there, taught there, and they did the same thing? It is exactly the same tactic. So how are you trying to differentiate these people? And we see that the people who are homegrown, even if you bring them to the United States and raise them and teach them and all that, nothing is going to work.
Well, there have been no such attacks in this country by homegrown terror cells, Manny. So we'll go on and discuss London next time we have people who've been to London on the air. But appreciate your phone call. Thanks very much. We're talking about Afghanistan and the run-up to the elections there, a surge of violence. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Phil. Phil calling us from Burke in South Dakota.
Yes, hi there.
Hi.
Hi. Well, let's see. I want to go to the reasoning behind the resurgence in groups such as the Taliban. And one thing I don't hear is any blame being put on American conduct of the war in Afghanistan. I recommend the book Black Hawk Down by Mark Bowden, talking about the incident in Somalia in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And in there, you can see the reasoning, some of the reasoning why a once friendly group of people will, after a while, turn against Americans. And I think a lot of it has to do with our overwhelming use of force and power. And for instance, in Afghanistan, bombing villages when we think there's a bad guy there, killing innocent people. And if you do that long enough, month after month, you start turning the population against Americans. I mean, if your family members are being killed for no good reason by a foreign power, I can see why.
Let me put that to Jonathan Lande. Have American military tactics where you were in Zabul province, were they heavy-handed?
Not at all. The Americans go out of their way to try and observe cultural sensitivities here, in that when they do a search of a compound, because Afghans live in extended families in these very large compounds. They will ask permission first from the head of the compound and then have them go with them, accompany them, and have Afghan troops go with them as well to search some of the more sensitive parts of the compound, like women's quarters. However, that said, there are instances, and I witnessed some, where that doesn't happen, where the Americans have gone in to a compound without the Afghans and without permission and have swept it, as well as when they come to a compound that is locked, they will, and that no one can produce a key, they will then blast the locks off with shotguns and go into the compound. Now, I have to definitely mention the fact that there have been Taliban. There are Taliban who do hide in these compounds, and there have been Americans who have been killed, surprising Taliban, living or hiding out in rooms of compounds. But during one of the patrols that I went on, the Americans like to try and meet with all of the village elders in these very, very remote villages up in the mountains and try to explain their presence there and why what they're doing there. And I witnessed one scene where the village elder said, okay, we understand that, but President Karzai, that's President Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan, has told us everybody must respect all religions, and yet the Americans came into our mosque today with their boots on. And when they go into our compounds, they smash the locks, and they smash the doors, and they smash our storage chests. Not even the Taliban do that. And therefore, when you take those incidents and you couple them with the fact that there have been civilians killed by mistake in American strikes aimed at the Taliban, it's my feeling that they do contribute in these very rural areas sympathy, do tend to pump up sympathy for the Taliban.
Gary Anderson, we just have a few seconds left in the segment. I wonder, you were talking to commanders in Kabul. What do they say about this?
Yeah, not only in Kabul, but I recently visited Quantico, where the Marines are, and getting ready in Fort Drum. And there's a real effort on to become more culturally sensitive. It's not going to be successful overnight, but I think my sensing is we're trying as hard as we possibly can.
Phil, thanks very much for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Now we're wrapping up our conversation with retired Marine Colonel Gary Anderson and Jonathan Landay, who's a senior national security correspondent for Knight Ridder Newspapers. He's on the phone with us from Kabul in Afghanistan about the recent surge of fighting in the eastern and southern areas of that country, whether it represents a threat to elections that are scheduled for September 18th, and about the long-term prospects for reconstruction and government building and democracy in Afghanistan. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is TOTN@NPR.org. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Jason. Jason calling from Reno, Nevada.
Yeah, hi, thank you. And I want to say it's actually an honor to be able to be on the line with a service member in Afghanistan.
Well, neither of them are service members. Colonel Anderson is retired.
So. Oh, I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
Well, I'm actually on CNN.com here, and it says poppy cultivation in Afghanistan doubled between 2003 and 2004 to a level 36 times higher than in the last year of the Taliban's rule, and that's according to White House figures. And then it continues to say the Taliban was cracking down on poppy production in the year before the U.S. military drove out the movement. I was wondering, could this increase in drug funds basically be hurting the American movement there?
Poppy, of course, processed into opium and heroin, but yes. Colonel Anderson.
Yeah, Jason, you hit the nail on the head. When you talk to both American and Afghan leaders, the greatest threat that they see to the long-term stability and democratization of the country is not the Taliban or al-Qaeda. It's the combination of drugs and militias, particularly sometimes called warlords.
Right.
It's an unholy combination. And in those areas, particularly where the government and the Americans don't have enough forces to really crack down on this sort of thing, it's a real problem. And the problem is, even to crack down on it, a lot of people, there's not a good substitute right now for the poppy crop. So it's a vexing problem, and it's something that if there's anything that's causing the leadership to lose sleep over in Kabul, it's that long-term prospect.
Right, and I understand it's actually, you know, it's in extreme remote and rural areas where it's not exactly like we could, you know, march in there and just put up a close sign.
Yes. Jonathan Landay, would you is this an issue in the eastern and the southern part of Zabul province where you were? And just to give us an idea of the scale, describe physically that province for us, would you?
Yeah, poppy cultivation is a problem in every province of Afghanistan, which is one of the reasons why it's grown so hugely. It is a major long-term problem. However, I have to emphasize that I also believe that the Taliban insurgency is as well, and for one other reason that I forgot to mention earlier, and that is this, that essentially they're turning Afghanistan into two countries, the south and the east, which is where they are active, and they have support, and the rest of the country, which is basically divided between the minorities of Afghanistan, the Tajiks, the Uzbeks, and the Hazaras. And so you're getting this ethnic divide again here, which I also believe is part of the Taliban tactic. That is to drive a wedge once again between the ethnic groups while you still have very, very, very serious tensions that are still that accumulated over 30 years of civil war, a lot of it between these ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm. Sectarian division.
Zabul looks like. Zabul.
I was just saying, sectarian divisions looking a great deal also a factor in politics in Iraq, of course. But go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jonathan.
Right. No, that's okay. And actually, it's very interesting that you should say that because, again, it's another parallel that I see between Afghanistan and what the Taliban are doing and what's happening in Iraq. And one other very important thought here, and that is, you asked me why perhaps the Taliban has decided not to attack polling stations and try and disrupt the election. And that may be because that there are quite a number of former Taliban who are participating in a government amnesty program who are running for office. And it suddenly occurred to a colleague of mine today that what you might see happen is the development of a political wing, so to speak, of the Taliban, working, or at least sympathetic to the Taliban, inside the tent, so to speak, pushing the kind of Islamic agenda that the Taliban would like to see, and have a military wing operating in the south and the east at the same time, pushing the same kind of agenda. We've seen it before in many, many countries. Look at what happened in Northern Ireland, where you had the IRA, the military wing, and Sinn Féin, the political wing of the same movement. And that, I think, if there's another long-term threat here, and there are many long-term threats, not quite as serious as the Taliban or as serious as the narcotics problem, but that might be it. Turning to Zabul province, it is, how do I describe it, awesome. The southern part of Zabul is flat, arid, high desert, where the small groups of Taliban are able to operate, riding motorcycles, planting IEDs in dirt tracks where Americans are trying to build roads. Then you have the rest of Zabul, which are these awesome mountains and steep defiles, steep valleys, where you have only one entrance into the valley and one exit. Mountains towering over 10,000 feet, and our troops engaged in these mountains every day. We did a lot of walking. It's very, very difficult. And as the commander of the unit put it to me, while we were on patrol, he said, "You know, this is a full up war, and people in the United States really, they feel, don't appreciate this. In fact, a lot of members of the unit that I was with had served in Iraq and said that this." Serving here in Afghanistan was much, much more difficult because in Iraq, at least, they said they got to ride in vehicles, in Humvees, whereas here they are doing these marches in 98, 99 degree heat, very high altitudes, carrying full combat gear up and down these mountains, and it's quite a challenge that they're facing.
Jason, thanks very much for the phone call. We got a little far afield from the poppies, but we appreciate the phone call anyway.
Oh, yeah. I actually had one more question as far as the Taliban and politics.
If you keep it very, very quick.
You got it. Now, I understood that the Taliban and Al-Qaeda was actually a list of people that went to Osama's medical care centers. So it could be pretty simple for someone to have gone in there and be classified as an Al-Qaeda member and then skate off scotch-free and, join politics. So I think that is something we should all be concerned about.
Okay, Jason, thanks very much for the call. And Jonathan Landay, thank you very much for staying up late there in Kabul to speak with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Landay, a senior national security correspondent for Knight Ridder Newspapers. Colonel Anderson, as always, we appreciate your time.
Good to be here.
Gary Anderson, a retired colonel of Marines, joined us here in Studio 3A. He was in Afghanistan last week, and his ankle will balloon a bit further while he recovers from his injuries there. We appreciate you coming in today.